This is Kevin Altieri, director of Batman the Animated Series.
This is best friend of the show, Monica Cabina, artist and colorist on Batman the Adventures Continue.
Hey, this is Jordan Gibson, artist of Batman the Adventures Continue.
And this is the DCAU Review.
Hosted by Cal and Liam. Streaming at DCAUreview.com.
And on your favorite podcast app.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everyone, to another bonus episode of the DCAU Review. I am Liam, and with me, as he always is Cal. Cal, it is, as all good things must, this wonderful Aqua Fantas month is coming to an end, and we thought we would go out with a little bit of an epilogue, but not that one.
That's right. Nah, that's not happening for a good long while as we continue here, as we are about to turn into our sixth year. I guess at some point in the last couple of weeks here, the original time recording, should have celebrated our 6 year anniversary of the podcast. But as we enter into year 7 of this podcast, Liam, we have plenty more content to cover here. Epilogue, as we've talked about on many occasions, will be the final episode of the podcast when and if we ever reach there. But yes, in the meantime, as we mentioned a few weeks back, if you took a break for the holidays, so did we. Well, sort of, at least from our main continuity. We have not done any reviews for a few weeks now, but we did look back a few weeks ago, did a re-review of Batman Mask of the Phantasm in honor of its 30th anniversary. And then on the Christmas weekend, we dropped a very special edition of Discuss This League. And that had two of the directors of that film, Mr. Kevin Altieri, who's a regular contributor to the podcast, it would seem at this point, and one Dan Reba making his DCAU review debut. Hey, that rhymes. And it was a wonderful conversation, about an hour and 40 minutes long or so. It's much longer than our standard episodes. If you haven't checked that out yet, feel free to check that out in the archives. And yeah, it's been a wonderful, wonderful month thus far, Liam. But as you mentioned, we are winding things down here with a bonus episode, which covers something we've not done in quite some time. And that is tackling a comic book review. And that's a tie-in comic book. So as far as continuity and whether or not this actually ties in here, I guess we can probably talk about that towards the end of the episode here, as to whether or not this fits based in everything we know. But we are tackling the Batman and Robin Adventures Annual number 1 from 1996. This was released, and it is titled Shadow of the Phantasm. So as we talked about and mentioned on our Discuss This League episode, this is a direct sequel written by one of the writers from the movie. So we get some extra points there for whether or not this would fall into some continuity. And it is a follow-up to the story. And it involves several of the characters, as we'll discuss here in a second, that we saw in the movie, including Andrea herself and a few other characters, as well as a couple new creations. Paul Dini always loves to create a new character or two and introduce them. And of course, we also have some artwork by some familiar names, people we've discussed before on the podcast multiple times, that being Ty Templeton, Rick Burchett, and Terry Austin, who's an inker throughout the book. And then a couple of other names who we maybe have mentioned occasionally, but probably haven't been able to give their full due to. So we'll discuss a couple of those artists as well, as we kind of do what we do. If you're familiar with our reviews of Batman the Adventures Continue, we usually kind of just give a brief overview of the plot, not necessarily a frame by frame, panel by panel review, but a general overview of the story. And then we'll talk a little bit about the artwork, the things that we liked, maybe if there was anything that stood out to us. And then, as we mentioned, we'll kind of talk about continuity wise where this fits in the DCAU here to wrap things up. Everybody's favorite topic, Liam.
Everybody's always got an opinion on that. So, yeah. So we'll just one little note. If you'd like to follow along, read along. This issue is a little. You have a few ways you could go hunting in the bins at your local comic store for an original copy. I know we still have our original copy, I believe, somewhere, Cal. But the easiest way, if you were looking for this digitally and you wanted to pay for it, is probably to find it in the collection Batman and Robin Adventures Volume 2, which collects several issues of that series, along with the first annual, which, as you mentioned, is sort of a special giant sized issue that the DC Comics, they still do annuals now. They went out of style for a while, I think, but they're back now. Just one big extra sized issue that's outside of the main conduit, a bonus episode, if you will, of this show. But yes, we have Batman and Robin Adventures Annual Number 1, as you mentioned, written by Paul Dini. The whole thing is colored by Lee Loridge and lettered by Tim Harkins. And then for artists, as mentioned, we have Ty Templeton, Dev Medan, Terry Austin, and Rick Burchett, and working as inkers. And we also have other pencilers, including Mike Parabek and Brandon Cruz. So we will talk more about the art, as Cal said, in a few minutes here. But yes, as we get to the start of this thing, we actually see a sort of retelling or reimagining of the very last scenes of Mask of the Phantasm. If we see Andrea, the Joker, and Batman in that old burned out World's Fair as everything is exploding around them, we see that Andrea had made her escape with the Joker down into the sewers, but before she can exact that revenge that she so wanted to, there's another explosion. And she's knocked unconscious, and the Joker is washed away in the river before she can take her revenge. So she leaves town, as we saw at the end of the film, but only for a time. As we see right at the start here, the Phantasm has returned, and we see her immediately getting to work, taking out a sniper who's been charged with watching someone. And we very quickly find out that person that the sniper was so interested in is none other than billionaire bachelor Bruce Wayne.
That's right. And the sniper, by the way, is speaking to some mysterious smiling individual. We only see the bottom half of their face, and they seem to be quite happy about what's going on. And they've predicted that the Phantasm would indeed show up. But we're left kind of with a cliffhanger there as we cut to the interior of where the sniper was standing outside, prepared to make his attack on Bruce Wayne. And inside the party, Bruce Wayne is there. It's a benefit for some of Gotham's orphans. And in it, Summer Gleason is there, and she's questioning the billionaire bachelor not only about his contributions and what it means to the city, but then even begins to press in a little bit to him about when he will start his own family. I guess she doesn't count Dick Grayson, his faithful ward, as a family member here. So poor Dick, he's forgotten about here. Perhaps this is before he adopted him. I don't know. Timeline wise, I guess we can talk about that at the end too.
Yeah, I mean, there is some sort of legal distinction of what a ward is, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that really exists anymore, and they even kind of point that out, because later on in the more modern comics, when, say, you know, a Tim Drake Robin was brought into Wayne Manor, they made it where he was actually adopted as his son instead of as a ward. But right. I think there's some sort of legal distinction there where Dick isn't his son on a technicality.
All right. Any lawyers listening, please send us slide into our DMs and give us the legal definition of ward versus adopted child, please. And if that's still a thing, thank you. Please and thank you at DCAU Review. But yes, Bruce remarks to Summer Gleason that when the right woman comes along, he'll be sure to take that into consideration about starting a family. And as if the devil heard him himself, who should appear but Andrea? And she, to Bruce's surprise, offers her her hand to take and to start dancing with. And she begins to share with him that she's there because she heard that someone was after him and looking to potentially kill him. He is a bit suspicious of based on how things were left and mentions that it's difficult to trust her. She herself takes offense to this and removes one of her earrings, which turns out to be a smoke bomb, making a quick escape, leaving Bruce and all of the partygoers very confused. As Bruce escapes and runs out to his...
Leaving me confused, quite frankly.
Everybody else, they're just like, all right, a woman threw an earring down with a smoke bomb. Bruce Wayne ran out of the room, and that's that.
Yeah, it's a very odd sequence. And I know the idea is you had to get Bruce kind of in a frantic place where he's rushing to the car and he's maybe not thinking straight. But it's just so wild that this woman just walks up to Bruce Wayne, throws a smoke bomb at him halfway through their dance, and then just jumps out a window. And then Bruce just goes sprinting out of the room.
It's too funny. But as you mentioned, Bruce runs to his limousine where Alfred is waiting and running up after him, seemingly forgetting, I guess, that she had just run away from him is Andrea, or at least someone who appears to be Andrea. She gets into the limousine, but she calls Alfred by the wrong name. So that's a little clue there that this may not be Andrea. It is in fact revealed to not be her, but instead another assassin who appears to be after Bruce. And we learn that this is the assassin named Kitsune, who has who Bruce, of course, he knows because Bruce knows everything, is named after the Japanese fox demon who takes the human form to destroy her victims. And I guess the reason she adopted this name is she has this diamond on her head or jewel on her head, which allows her to project an image of anybody she's ever seen. Essentially, she's Mystique, right? From X-Men.
She's Mystique, and she has claws like Lady Deathstrike. So yes, I think there's a lot of X-Men in the DNA of this character.
Correct. Yeah. There's a lot of that. Maybe that explains why we never saw this character again after this issue. Spoiler alert. Yes. Suddenly, I will just say this. I love that the interior of the car seems to grow wide enough where we have people standing up and a full-fledged fist fight happening in the back of the limousine as things get not only violent with the claws, but then breaking of glass bottles. Bruce's life appears to be in danger, but just when things seem bleak and Bruce seems to be overwhelmed, crashing through the sunroof is none other than the Phantasm herself. And Kitsune makes an escape through the side door. And it turns out that Bruce may be ready to discuss just exactly what is going on.
That's right. So as we discuss Act Two, Bruce sort of lets Andrea in on a little bit of what happened directly after the events in the film. He says that he looked everywhere for her and even went to see that slime ball Arthur Reeves, who was still recovering in the hospital at the time, to see if he had any idea where Andrea could have gone. And Andrea had the opinion that she didn't want anything to do with Arthur. And so she left town, and not really knowing what to do with herself at that point, she did what she had been doing the whole time to, I guess, hone her skills and to keep herself afloat financially, which is to use the Phantasm as more of a mercenary, whether that could be working as an enforcer, a thief, or what have you, any sort of ill-gotten gains, even an assassin, as Bruce points out. But as she was working through that sort of criminal underworld, she got wind of a hit put out on Bruce Wayne, and so that drew her back to Gotham, back to Bruce. And even though, as Bruce tries futilely to put some boundaries between them, as always the case, They are once again making out and embracing as Alfred walks in. They bring back the a fan favorite gag from the movie where Alfred always walks in on them right as they're things are getting hot and heavy for them. But as Alfred excuses himself, we see that he's knocked unconscious, and then a group of masked thugs break into the room. And Alfred seemingly has recovered, but it turns out once again to be Kitsune in disguise. And she smashes a vase over Andrea and knocks him out. And as they all point their guns, Bruce goes crashing through the window.
People just jumping out all kinds of windows in this comic book.
Well, Bruce is not protecting his secret identity particularly well. But I guess in this case, they do say they think he's dead. So, but yes, he jumps out of the window into the river below. But we see him escape into a drainage pipe, which leads into the Bat Cave. And we see Batman suited up. He makes sure to check on Alfred and make sure he's okay. And then he decided they sort of discuss who could be behind all of this. And they mentioned that Kitsune had said something about the big boss having a big smile on his face. And Alfred, rightly, I would say, connects that to the Joker. But it turns out that might not be who it is, because as Batman says, the Joker's been locked up in Arkham for months. And that's where we get to our next and third act, where we find Andrea tied up in the room. We see her phantasm gear being tried on by a mystery man as they sort of explain how they began to understand who was behind the mask. And it's revealed to be none other than that slimeball himself, Arthur Reeves, who has been permanently disfigured by the Joker toxin. To resemble the Joker in a somewhat ironic twist of fate for the councilman. And he explains that he had an allergic reaction, and that while the doctors were able to save his life, that he basically ended his political career then and there. And he's with nothing left to seek but revenge. Sound familiar? He went to try to put together who this mysterious phantasm who had mucked everything up was. And when he realized that a woman with red hair was sort of working as the go-between for the phantasm, he finally put two and two together of who the phantasm had to be. And right when it looks like he's ready to take that final revenge, as Kitsune puts her claws to Andrea's throat, here comes Batman for our big punch up to for our big finale here.
He's here to save the day. Unfortunately, very quickly gets overwhelmed. He handles all of Arthur Reeves' lackeys pretty easily. But then once Kitsune shows back up, she overpowers him and blinds him with the jewel on her head. This allows her to get the upper hand. But in his blindness, Batman is smart enough to throw a batarang that knocks her out. However, as he's perhaps still dazed and attempting to untie Andrea from behind, that dastardly villain Arthur Reeves clanging Batman over the head with the Phantasm's own owned weapon, hand weapon, the scythe or sickle, I guess the hand sickle.
He didn't actually use the blade though, huh?
Yeah, I guess he just used the flat end or the round bullet shaped part of it. I guess. I don't know. Clanging Batman over the head, knocking him out, and he goes over not only Andrea is freed and she goes to assist Batman at this point, but she herself is taken out from behind also by Arthur. Bruce and Andrea at this point both overwhelmed and somewhat dazed. Arthur clearly begins getting the upper hand. Batman, extremely weakened at this point, is no match for Arthur, who is able to unmask him, revealing that he's Bruce. And just as he has the sharp-ended blade to Bruce's throat at this point, about to kill him, Andrea swoops in with a swift kick to the jaw, and she knows that at this point she has to say goodbye to him forever. At this point, we see Arthur waking up after his swift kick to the jaw and grabbing the weapon once again. The Phantasm standing in front of the window, it gives her famous line, "Your angel of death awaits." And, Arthur Reeves is pretty excited to run towards her, knowing that she appears to be unarmed at this point, and he dives at her, and third time's the charm for somebody falling out of a window. This time, unfortunately, as he dives towards her, it turns out there's no one behind the mask. It was just floating there. Arthur tumbles over the grate and falls to his death over the side of the building. Batman swoops down and realizes that Andrea was not there at all. It was just the cape. And we get our little epilogue, which is Kitsune being loaded into the back of the police wagon, Batman having a conversation with Commissioner Gordon, who discusses how Arthur Reeves' life ended up being very tragic. We get the confirmation that Arthur is dead, and that it's a shame that they never got to know who the person behind the phantasm was, and who this person is, and whether he's still alive. And he asks Batman if he ever knew who it was, or did he ever see who the phantasm was. Batman pauses and then turns away, saying to the commissioner, "No, commissioner, I never knew the person behind the mask." And as he swings off, we see him swing past a gargoyle in the shape of a praying angel. And that praying angel suddenly morphs into Andrea, who has Kitsune's helmet on. And I guess the helmet also gives you powers to turn into things that are inanimate also. I didn't get that from the initial description, but
sure.
But sure, right, exactly.
Vague magic.
We get her bidding a tearful adieu to her love, and she says, "Once again, it ends." And that's the end of our story for this issue, Liam.
That's right. So we can get into our thoughts on the story itself before we talk about art and the canonicity of it. So I'm of two minds here. We talked about this a little bit on our Discuss This League with Kevin and Dan, about how that first story is so perfect that it's hard to feel like any sequel could have ever, like the one that there was much story left to tell between Andrea and Bruce, and two, that it could ever live up to that piece, especially because it's so fresh in our minds, I think.
Sure.
It is fun. It's fun to revisit that. And what it really comes down to, this feels to me, and this is maybe a weird analogy, but you know what this feels like? This feels like when the main character on like a sitcom has like a recurring guest star significant other for a while, mm-hmm. and like it's getting pretty hot and heavy and serious, and then they do the big dramatic breakup because the actor is leaving to go work on another show or whatever, okay. And then like three seasons later they bring that actor back for like a one episode guest star, and it's like, oh, the old girlfriend's back in town.
Yeah.
Like that's a little bit what this feels like to me. It feels like, oh well, we're just kind of revisiting, kind of re-going over, we're doing like a truncated version of the same story of she comes back to Gotham, she and Bruce are together again for a second, but ultimately they can't as they're ripped apart by, you know, revenge and tragedy and just being two completely different people at this point in their lives. And isn't it so sad that they can't, you know, they can't work it out. So it feels like we're treading a lot of the same ground,
mm-hmm.
As the original, like I said, but it is still fun to just revisit it. And bringing back Arthur Reeves as a straight up villain is also, I think, kind of fun, because there isn't a scene where Batman just gets to deck that guy in the movie, even though he's a real slime ball and he deserves it, because he's, sure. You know, he's trying to get the police to unmask and capture or kill Batman for the whole movie.
Sure.
So maybe it's fun to see him get more direct comeuppance, but I don't know. Like I like it, but I didn't love it, I guess.
So things that I did like, I guess I'll lay it out this way. Things I did like. I like the fact that Mr. Dini, who, you know, wrote this, decided not to just do a straight rehash with involving the Joker. Mm. I feel like that would have been the very easy way out here. And instead you go to this other person, you kind of intimate that the Joker is involved based on some of the early visuals and some of the dialogue and all of that, who would have a motive, all that. But it kind of giving you that curveball where, oh, it turns out to not be the Joker. I did like that. Like, I like involving Arthur and kind of putting a bow on his story, because as you said, you don't really get a resolution to the end of Arthur's story. We know that he was a councilman, but you don't really see him involved in any of the other politics or anything going forward in any of the tie-in comics or any of the other movies or anything. So truly, like, okay, so what happened to this guy who got power because, or through his slimy, you know, selling out of Andrea's father to the mob? Did he ever get a comeuppance for it? And why wouldn't Andrea come back to kill him? That's a question that I have, is like, if she figures out that he's the one who sold the boss out to the mob, and maybe she didn't know. I don't know how she didn't put two and two together, but how she didn't know, I guess Batman's the one that finds out that he's the one that's responsible for that. I guess there's not a direct link to her finding that out, but regardless, anyway,
no, but she does mention that, because when Bruce talks about going to see her, she says, and he says, like, I don't want to ever see, and, you know, Arthur says, I don't ever want to see her again.
Right.
And Andrea says, well, the feeling's mutual, because that worm sold my father out to the mob. So,
right. She must have found out somehow.
In the film, she knew.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So she knew somehow. So why she wouldn't have gone back at some point and tried to kill him is kind of quizzical. The things I don't like, the addition of, like, whoever this hired assassin that Arthur Reeves hires, Kitsune character. Okay. Like we talked about, Paul Dini likes to create these one-off kind of femme fatale characters that sometimes reoccur and come up into the other comics. We talked about, I think you've dubbed it sort of like the weird Dini verse that exists within multiple continuities of comics, whether it's main DC continuity or the DC animated universe. And it kind of exists in both of those realms. If there was a Venn diagram.
Yes. He will reference DCAU stuff in non DCAU stories, and he will reference non DCAU things in DCAU stories.
Right. So that Dini esque storytelling thing here, I guess this was an attempt at that, maybe to create a character that could have a long term pop up again. I don't know, but didn't obviously hasn't. I don't like that character, but I think
That does just feel like a very, like, I don't know, like a very, it's just a very like sci-fi, like, and really, and it's magic, like it's a magic gem that, so that even feels like, and we talked about this, I think, a couple of times on, even knowing where we go, obviously this is a connected universe, eventually there's Superman and Dr. Fate and Zatanna and all these crazy things that happen in the later seasons of Justice League, but at this point it's such a grounded world still for the most part. But to having someone that has a magic gem that can transform themselves into who, you know, anybody, and also inanimate objects, is a
also
little,
anything, right?
And also has claws and is a super assassin. Just, yeah, I don't know. It just feels like he took a grab bag and of random things, and because you wanted to have a shape, like I don't know.
Yeah, it could have just been who are we to judge storyteller Paul Dini? But that's what we're doing here as our podcast.
It's not
my taste. Yeah, it's not my cup of tea for characters. So as far as if you're going to do a sequel, which we said, like, there's so many things that don't need sequels, and I feel like Phantasm didn't need a sequel. I think if you were going to do a sequel to it, and you're going to do it in comic book form, which is loosely canon, I think maybe this would get like a B minus or C plus as far as, like, okay, the way that the story went. I think that the idea that Bruce, I don't know, the romance stuff sort of is rushed through. You don't really, because of the, even though this is a supersized comic, you don't really get to flesh out that romance stuff and whether Bruce would continue. He says he's not going to continue a romance, but then they're making out, but that isn't left with much room to breathe either. There's obviously still care between the two characters, but you also don't get the idea of what would happen, which I think I felt like is the most interesting thing that happens at the end of the actual movie. Like, we know that Andrea is still alive. We know that Bruce knows that she's alive, or assumes that she's alive, based on the, you know, the locket being found in the cave. So what would happen if Bruce has to come face to face with her and kind of make the decision to bring her to justice or not? And that's sort of taken out of her hands, his hands again in this comic book. You don't, he doesn't have to kind of come up with that, that internal struggle of, is he going to let her go? Is he going to make her face justice? Like, what is the, to me, that's the most interesting thing. And we're kind of robbed of that again, because Bruce gets knocked out and she gets, finds a way to kill Arthur with Bruce being knocked out again. So
it is very much a back to square one, where yes, she basically fakes Arthur and Bruce out into thinking that they've tumbled to her death as well, and then we see that she's, you know, and then he obviously sees that it's just the cloak, so he knows she's still out there again. But there's not really that closure of what he would have done or anything. So yeah, like I said, I think it's fun to revisit these characters. It's fun to to play with it. I think especially using Arthur Reese as the villain, as you said, not just going to having the Joker be the bad guy is always kind of refreshing, as fun as that character is to play with. So I enjoy this as a one-off, but it does feel pretty superfluous, I would say, to, as far as adding anything new to the Bruce Andrea story, or even really acting as an epilogue, because to me it just kind of, in a weird way, it kind of does, in certain ways, at least as far as the beats of Bruce and Andrea coming back into each other's lives and feeling like there's going to be some conflict at first, because you know he's kind of standoffish with her, but then they fall back in love, and then you know the big battle happens and she disappears again. It just feels like we're kind of treading over, you know, the same ground we've already tread over with the movie. So if you were going to bring those characters, and there are other tie-in comics that do use the Phantasm, and even though I don't necessarily know that those, I would say, are great uses of her either, I do appreciate at least that they didn't just do the, you know, it didn't necessarily feel like a rehash as so much as this story did, to an extent. But to your point, there are some fun layers, and maybe if nothing else, the best new part is seeing Arthur Reeves come back as a character that really only had existed in that movie. All right, there, Cal, and then we will move on to talk about the art. So we have a lot of names, as mentioned at the top, who work on this story as pencilers and inkers. Lee Rowridge once again did the colors for the whole book. But we do have several artists, pencilers and inkers. Ty Templeton took care of the prologue and the epilogue. And then we have, for Act One, we have Dev Madden with Terry Austin. For Act Two, we have the late great Mike Parabek with inks by Rick Burchett. And then Act Three, we had another one of the regular tie-in artists, Brandon Cruz, also inked by Terry Austin. So what stands out to you as far as art here? Now, I will just say at the start, we do get a pretty great reimagining or retelling of the end of the film with Mr. Templeton's art, but then we kind of get right into the action with the Phantasm appearing out of the smoke. There's some pretty striking visuals, I would say, for sure.
Yeah, I think one of the things I noticed is just kind of the layout, and going from what we've kind of seen in the modern comics and what we're kind of used to with doing the Batman the Adventures Continue is just kind of more of a standard, everything's pretty standard. You either have five or six squares or rectangles that kind of make up a page. Everything's very squared off. There's not a whole lot of splash pages. There's not a lot of overlapping of your squares, so everything's kind of sectioned off. So that's with the exception of like one or two panels, but just something that I noticed that I guess a difference in the way that modern comics are kind of sequenced and organized. But as far as Mr. Templeton, I think we've sung his praises well deservedly so over and over again. It would have been interesting, I think, to see some of his work and creating a consistent look throughout. I think that's the one thing that stands out, and that's just comes with the territory when you have multiple artists working on a story, as we even talked about with some of the Adventures Continue comics, is when you have a single issue that's done by multiple artists, sometimes it kind of causes you to pause in the middle of the story and maybe takes you out a little bit before you can kind of just readjust. Mm-hmm. With this having three acts, which was sort of standard for those Batman Adventures and Batman and Robin Adventures comic books and how they were sequenced back in the day, you kind of have a little bit to adjust to, but it is having three different sets of artists throughout, I think, is probably not ideal in the long run of telling a sequential story. With that said, I think in the first setup, you're right, I think you can hear the lines based on the visuals and the adaptation. I love that we get a little bit of extra kind of the what happened after the explosion. So we kind of see Andrea and the Joker in the sewers and the ensuing explosion that caused them to separate under there. So you kind of get the backstory there instead of having to kind of play that up in your mind. It adds to a visual. But then the very first shot that we get of the Phantasm in that act one, coming across that scene, coming across the rooftop there, with you get the kind of the distorted view of the up close shot, the perspective shot of the sickle and kind of close to you, and then mm-hmm. her kind of rushing across, gives you that same feeling of her running across the rooftops in the scene in the movie. Mr. Madden, I think did the first sequence, right? He did the act one. So yeah, I think his certainly looks like it has a little bit of a more Eastern influence to it, but I would say it sort of matches up with sort of what you eventually get to with Rick Burkett's artwork in a lot of the later tie-in comics and Gotham Adventures and even some of the Batman and Robin Adventures. So I think his artwork and art style certainly matches well with the rest of the issue. And then we haven't really had the opportunity. I think we've alluded to it a couple of times, but Mike Parabek was like the Batman Adventures for the first run, the first tie-in comic. He did, I think, the first six issues of that series. So many of the issues that we hold near and dear and the things that I think hold an almost equal place to the to some of the episodes of the series, because we were able to read these whenever we wanted to as kids and kind of go back to the same stories over and over again. I can remember also having like tracing paper that we had and like tracing images and stuff like that, and tracing over some of Mr. Parabek's work. And so many of his pieces are kind of ingrained in my soul as Batman the Animated Series. And he was unfortunately he passed very kind of tragically and not too long before this annual was actually released, as we learned. And but he was just such a great artist. He worked on a lot of other stuff too. He's definitely worth checking out some of the other stuff that he worked on. Mm-hmm. As far as DC Comics are concerned. But he's just an artist that feels like Batman to me. It's very much in the same vein as Ty Templeton. Like he's synonymous with the Batman Adventures and the Batman and Robin Adventures. And it's kind of sad to me that we can kind of put two and two together that maybe he didn't get to finish the work for this. Because I do see Mr. Burkett's influence a little bit in some of the artwork, and
especially in on Andrea's faces. This is
agreed,
very similar to if you look at a lot of Mr. Burchett's work from when he, especially when he had taken over penciling duties on like Gotham Adventures or Superman Adventures later on. It's a bit, there's some very Burchett faces in this as well, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I think the one thing that that kind of strikes me about that act too, especially at the beginning, is the colors are a lot more dull. They're not as vibrant. I know some of it is flashbacks, but some of the choices, like the scenes in Wayne Manor as Bruce is kind of talking with Andrea, their skin tones are sort of dulled out, and it's supposed to kind of give you this dark aura of what's happening and the conversation that's happening between the two of them, and this kind of sadness that kind of overarching sadness in these moments. But I love the shots of Bruce not only jumping out of the window, but then landing in the water, walking through this giant pipe to get into the Bat Cave. Just beautiful shots there. And even the sort of like hazy Alfred's waking up shot of Bruce standing over him. I love, like, it just perfectly evokes that idea of somebody coming out of a, you know, up being unconscious to see, see somebody standing over top of them. And then I think for our final act, I think these are the pencils and the art that I kind of dislike the most. I feel like it kind of departs both not only in the art style as far as the drawings and the character models and all of that, but also some of the choices in inking. There are certain panels that are kind of over inked, or the inked in a more classic, that classic like 70s and 80s style. And obviously this was only a decade or so after that was more in vogue, but it doesn't line up exactly with the rest of the issue. That's not to say that the sequences aren't interesting. The characters are just a little bit more off model. They just don't quite look like the rest of the issue. Even Arthur Reeves is a little bit like, he seems to have shifted and morphed into a completely different character. It feels like.
There's like a little too much detail in everyone's faces and like in their eyes. I feel like, especially like there's extra, they look a little, and maybe this is a coincidence. Like, I don't know if I would have made this connection before doing research, but Brandon Cruz, who did the pencils for Act 3, was a storyboard artist on a lot of like Disney and Nickelodeon cartoons and other sort of children's animation over the years. And like, wow, that when I, and then I started looking at Andrea in that act, like on the page where Arthur slaps her and you get this kind of close up of her. I was like, yeah, she does kind of look like more like Ariel from The Little Mermaid or something right now. Yeah. Like, not so much in like the colors, you know, but in, yeah, and then, yeah, there's one shot of Arthur right before Batman crashes through the skylight, which still looks great. Like, some like Batman, I think, looks pretty good throughout. But yeah, it's just like there's extra wrinkles and sort of detailing in the face that don't quite jive with this, you know, this very, this sort of more simplified, you know, Bruce Timm style art.
I was going to say it leans more towards, as opposed to a Jack Kirby influence, more like a Wally Wood or somebody that has a lot more detail and expression, like the wrinkles and the details, as opposed to that simplified, streamlined Kirby Timm, you know, even Templeton kind of look to things. So it's not saying it's bad. It's just, it doesn't fit, I feel like, with this style, this particular issue, compared to the other two artists. So that's not to say I do like the shot once Arthur kind of leaps after what he thinks is the phantasm. I think that shot looks great. And then his realization that he's not killing her. He's about to die as he's falling out of this window is kind of terrifying. But yeah, I would say that's probably my least favorite of the three.
Yeah, and I also do wonder, because Mr. Cruz did quite a few other issues of Batman and Robin Adventures, and I also wonder if it was all his art throughout. I feel like we talked about, we could probably settle into it a little bit more and just get used to it as, hey, okay, this is how this artist draws. But comparing it against some of the, as you said, some of the really true heavyweights of these Batman the Animated Series tie-in books with Mr. Parabek and Mr. Templeton, it's hard to not notice how different and a little bit out of place that section looks compared to the others. But yeah, and then we do get our little epilogue of Gordon and Batman talking, and I do like that panel sequence there of Batman swinging away and sort of disappearing into the background, and then once again, we get Andrea with tears in her eyes saying goodbye, my love. And then just sort of this one last shot of the of the church as the sort of the everyone sort of fades into the back into the grime of Gotham City. It's a nice little bookend from the start of it, where we sort of had the, as we talked about, the story does have sort of a full circle back to square one feel to it, and I think the art kind of matches that with Mr. Templeton's art at the end there as well. So with that being said, Cal, as you mentioned, we gotta look at the potential canonicity of this, and like I don't see any reason why it couldn't be. Why it couldn't be canon? There isn't like a character, you know, that shouldn't be here, or right. You know, that can't be here yet, or anything. It's not like they don't mention Superman or anything. Like,
Maybe you were going to say this. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I think if anything, this confirms canon based on the next time we see Andrea / the Phantasm.
That's fair. Spoilers for Epilogue, as mentioned, the episode. But yeah, we do. This is the confirmation of what she did, what she was doing with the rest of her life after the events of the movie, which is just kind of floating through life, working as this sort of mercenary assassin for whoever the highest bidder is. So yeah, I think you could say this is canon. Is just you know, she made one last trip through Gotham and it didn't work out, so she just sort of became a more hardened and, you know, more of a ghost, more of a phantasm, literally, and just went about her life slicing people up and taking a paycheck for it, I guess. Doesn't feel like there was any happy endings in Andrea's future for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and that matches, honestly, if we're following the popular 2022 logic of twin flames, if that's what Bruce and Andrea are here, it would make sense that they're both not going to experience happiness, and we know that Bruce ends up being a sad, alone old man the latter half of his life, lonely old man. So who's to say that Andrea also didn't suffer that same fate as a result, if they were, you know, destined to sort of suffer together. So, yeah, I could take this either or. We don't see Arthur Reeves ever again on screen, at least.
Right.
There's nothing that we see that would contradict this, as you mentioned. You know, it's not really mentioned ever again that he had this second run in, of course. It's not mentioned on screen. Right. As we talked about with Dan last week, you know, that appearance in Epilogue was sort of just an idea that, hey, wouldn't this be cool, because they were doing all these other things that were sort of winks and nods to people who knew. It wasn't something they thought of sort of as something that was, and Dan even said he kind of wished they hadn't done it. So take that as you will. So yeah, I don't think there's anything that would say it's not canon. So read this, and if you want to make it canon, go ahead. I don't think there's anybody or anything that's stopping you. But honestly, that's, you could say the same thing about any.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about that all the time on our Batman The Adventures Continue reviews. By the way, that last issue review is still coming someday.
One day, that's right.
50 years from now,
now is.
but yes, but we always talk about that, because that's been one of the, I won't say complaints, but one of the things people pointed out was how much of those seasons, even just little things or little mentions or characters being in certain costumes before they should be or whatever, kind of contradicts the timeline of Justice League or Batman Beyond or whatever. And yeah, my thought is always just like, you could probably try to do backflips to make it all fit together and make every single DCAU tie-in comic, except for the one where he meets long-haired Superman and they fight red-haired Lex Luthor. That's pretty steeped in an Elseworld, I would say.
That's a great Mike Parabek issue, though.
Oh, absolutely tremendous.
Great Mike Parabek visuals there.
Lex Luthor and Maxi Zeus team up, a lot of fun. But yeah, I think you could probably do backflips to make almost any of these canon. But for this one, I don't think it requires too much stretching. It's just it's an also ran tale. It's there if you want it. If you just wanted to spend a little more time with these characters, I think it does that job. It feels authentic. It just also feels, because you don't have, you don't have a 77-minute film, perhaps. It does feel, as you said, just feels kind of really truncated and rushed, especially the part where Bruce and Andrea get to have their little reunion, where Bruce is sort of confronted with what that would mean if she did try to come back into his life, knowing, when he knows full well that she's this murderer and this assassin, like, could he somehow look the other way because of what she once meant to him? Like, that's an interesting story.
Yeah.
And one we've seen, the character of Batman go up against with other characters, not necessarily to that extent, but we've talked quite at length about his relationship with Talia or his relationship with Catwoman in that same way of, there's a clear, deep love and affection for her. And would that outweigh, his sense of justice, his vow that he made to his parents, on that day so many years ago. So I think there's fun themes to explore whenever you bring the Phantasm back. But because that first entry is so great, it's a good problem to have, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Because that first movie, as we've just been talking about for several weeks now, it's a masterpiece, and it's so perfect that it's very hard, I think, to find a reason to bring her back other than fan service. And fan service is okay. When I was 13 or whatever, and that epilogue episode came out and I saw the Phantasm walk through a scene, I lost my mind. I was so excited. Yeah. Like, that was incredible at the time. So I don't think there's that. I'm not saying that has no value,
for sure.
But as far as adding to that existing story, which you would always hope a sequel does, I'm not sure that this is like a great job of that either.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's I would struggle to put it better or more succinctly than that, in that it's fine. I'm sure that the powers that be were clamoring for something that would sell an annual. And that's, I guess, maybe we didn't necessarily discuss that. I don't know if that's still how the modern day annual is done. But you really like it very much felt like back in the day, the annuals were done in a way to try and get to boost sales. Like, how are we going to get mm-hmm. people to buy this one issue, other than the people that buy, every other issue right. of this comic book? This might be the annual is sort of the one that anybody can pick up, because it tends to be a standalone issue, or it tends to be an issue that will grab people. And obviously the cover, which we didn't even talk about, but a very interesting cover, also by Mr. Ty Templeton, I believe, features, the Phantasm. It's the body of the Phantasm removing a mask, and underneath of it is the Joker's mm-hmm. face. So right off the bat, you assume that the villain may in fact be the Joker. So it kind of, that does also lend you to believe that the Joker would be involved with this issue. But it is a very a very interesting image that sort of grasps at your attention immediately there. So the idea that, okay, the powers that be are like, all right, guys, let's get a great story that we're going to boost sales here and get a bunch of people to buy this. What can we sell them? It's like, hey, let's bring back the Phantasm that, while this wasn't a commercial success, it was certainly a loved by the people that saw it. And this is 3 or 4 years after it had been released at that point. So, I'm sure the team enjoyed playing in that sandbox again. There's more meat on the bone after leaving mm-hmm. the character sort of cliffhanger there on the end of the boat. And, it is a fine piece to, and especially in a vacuum, I guess, as far as a comic book is concerned here.
So. Yeah. This is definitely the deep freeze to the Heart of Ice,
for sure.
Like, it's a fun little tale. There's a lot of fun to be had, a lot of great art, as we talked about in the issue, a lot of cool images. fun to see these characters back and get to play in that sandbox, but not ultimately even approaching, you know, what the original material did. So, and that's hardly a slight against this issue when you're comparing it to one of the most celebrated pieces of media ever, you know, ever made in this universe. So, with that all said, Cal, as we begin to wrap it up, we want to thank everyone for listening. This is our last episode for the year here, as we at least on the original air date. We're just about to turn that calendar page over. So we just want to say thank you to everybody for listening. We got those Spotify Wrapped sends us some data, and we know we increased our listeners, we increased our followers a lot this year. I know our social media followers went up as well. Just want to thank everybody for sticking with us. Cal, this has been a really fun year for us. We've kind of experimented, I think, a little bit more with doing different things, trying different formats, maybe mixing in more non-main continuity DCAU reviews. And I appreciate the feedback we've gotten that people seem to enjoy those as well. And we always appreciate hearing from folks who listen to the show and what they want to hear as well. But it's been a really fun year.
It has, absolutely. And I think in honor of maybe our most fun year, who am I to say us from the last 6 years are not here to defend themselves? So I'm going to just go out on a limb and say our most fun year yet, Liam, our episode next week. We don't do clip shows here because, as we discussed before going on the air, unless you have a full-time person that is editing podcasts that can go through 50 plus episodes mm-hmm. and pick out the best clips, that makes no sense to me. So what we're going to do, Liam, is do a quick recap as we've done the last couple years, and that is the DCAU review, year in review, and we're going to cover all of 2023 as we look back and look at some of our highest rated episodes. We'll take a look mm-hmm. at some benchmark episodes, maybe even talk about our most listened to and shared episodes according mm-hmm. to Spotify Wrapped. And we'll also talk a little bit about what we have coming up in the year 2024. So it'll be looking a little bit forward, looking backwards, and also standing in one place and celebrating year seven as we enter year seven, sure. My goodness, of our little podcast.
Absolutely. Aqua Phantasma 2, anybody? I just gotta say, you're gonna have to pitch it to us because I don't know what else we have that could where we could do an entire other month. We're not re-reviewing Fish Story, I can tell you that.
We're gonna re-review Batman Mask of the Phantasm. Right.
There's only so many times we can we can milk that teat, I think, before you run out of steam completely. But I would love to hear anyone's pitch for Aqua Phantasma 2, just because there's pretty much nothing I've enjoyed more in the entire time we've done on this show than just saying that weird mashed up word that I just thought of at the spur of the moment. So
Aqua Phantasma 2 Electric Boogaloo, I think. This is the going.
Now we're talking.
It's the going suggestion.
Now we're talking. We're accepting pitches in our Instagram DMs or on the site formerly known as Twitter, which, by the way, you can follow us at DCAU Review on there, as well as on Threads. I log in about once a month and post one thing and then forget about it. But if you're on there, you can still follow us there as well. If you're looking for an alternative, if you would just want to give Mark Zuckerberg another chance to mine your personal data, then I know I do. Yes, we were looking, as Cal said, we will be looking back at the year 2023 next week for our show, and it'll be great. In the meantime, thank you everybody for listening. If you'd like to support the show monetarily, there are a few ways to do that in the show notes. You can either head to our store and pick yourself up a hat or a shirt or a mug or something. Or there's also a little donate button there where you can buy me and Cal a cup of coffee, which we appreciate. We have a few regular donators that we appreciate that do that each month. So there's a couple of ways you can support us. And of course, the best free way to support us is to log in to your podcast app of choice and give us 5 stars, leave us a review if it lets you, or if you're listening to us on YouTube on the wonderful Pod Tower YouTube channel, we'd appreciate you subscribing and liking the video and favoriting the video and sharing those links. And you're not only helping us out, but also the wonderful folks at the Watchtower database with their jump on the Batwagon show and archives and Tim Talk show as well. So a lot of great stuff over on the Pod Tower channel that we are happy to be a part of. And Cal, I think there's really only one thing left to say, and that's Happy New Year. So until next week and next year, I'm Liam.
And I'm Cal.
And we'll be back soon with another episode of the DCAU Review.
Here's to survival.